Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Coverage Podcast. After a slow start, the Super Bowl had it all. Patrick Mahomes, Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, overtime, and a repeat championship for the Chiefs. The Browns had another defection from the coaching staff, and their focus turns to the scouting combine at the end of this month. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of GO, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Hey Scott, do you have kind of a empty feeling like so many people out there do? There's no football this Sunday.
Right? It's crazy. You know what? I think it'll kick in at some point, right? We just had a game Sunday, so I haven't had time to miss it yet. But you know, all of a sudden I'll be flipping around on TV these right coming up on the weekends, and it'll be a lot more college basketball, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, that's the cool thing about sports. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you do the same thing. And I'm sure we've talked about this before, and so many people do it. But I mean, don't you kind of, we being sports fans that we are, you kind of live your schedule and your life by the sports calendar. Because now you know, spring training, pitchers and catchers have
Right.
reported. So now you're feeling excited about baseball coming back. And then the March Madness, one of the great times. You think about the Masters, which I know for you as a golfer is huge. And then before you know it, I mean, let's be honest, the NFL season never really stops, just the games do. And before you know it, it will be time for football to start back up again. So, never a dull moment, I guess we can say, right?
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I still do some editing shifts and, you know, lay out the paper and those kind of things. And it's like, this is a busy time. You have the Super Bowl and like high school basketball is really cranking up. We do a lot of wrestling. And then it's like, man, so at some point things are going to, you know, kind of tail off. But right, NASCAR starts this week, the Daytona 500 this weekend. You know, then you move right into baseball and spring sports. So like there are lulls in the calendar, in the sports calendar overall, but never like a real lull, right? We go, I mean,
No.
straight from the NFL to NASCAR, right? The NBA's going. Spring training's kick or you know, kicking off like you mentioned. And then, you know, from a Browns perspective, it hasn't, I mean, it's you know, it's subsided a little bit. I've gone days without writing. But there's always trickling things like, you know, this morning, like a couple minutes ago, we got the official announcement of the new offensive line coach, Andy Dickerson, and the assistant line coach Roy Itzvan. But 2 weeks from now, I'll be coming home from the combine, right? So like and then it's free agency right after that. And then it's preparation for the draft. So it's a little bit of drips and drabs, but there's always something going on for sure.
I know there's probably people listening that were annoyed by the Taylor Swift deal. Others enjoyed it. I have to say, this is one of the more fun NFL seasons I can remember in a long time because the Browns were relevant again. They were exciting. They made it back to the playoffs. And then I was fine with the Taylor Swift stuff. My daughters were into it. It made it more enjoyable with my family and, the other things, the fun things that we do. And, if you can get the family incorporated with the NFL, it just makes it so much more exciting. And I have no issue with it. Many more viewers, most watched Super Bowl ever. So, I don't have an issue with it, and I don't think you do either.
No, I don't at all, and I think the people who do, I don't quite understand. I don't understand that. I'll tell you this: Judd, my daughter, she's 25, but a huge SpongeBob fan, right? So the Nickelodeon did that huge hit to their SpongeBob broadcast. So we watched a chunk of that, and they showed, and I think the broadcast is different, right? I mean, I know the graphics and the commentary is different, but I'm pretty sure the camera shots were different. They had a whole bunch of Taylor Swift on there, and which makes sense, right? They're appealing to a younger audience. So all the people that were mad enough about whatever CBS was showing about Taylor Swift, they would not have been able to handle this because there's a whole lot of Taylor Swift, and every time they showed her, they or every time they talked about Travis Kelce, they called him Taylor Swift's boyfriend. So.
Yeah. So it's funny. We ended up watching the first half at some friend's house, left after the halftime show, watched the second half at home. I ended up with like 3 or 4 hours of sleep. It was brutal, but that's another story. But my daughter in the second half, we were watching it. My wife and I and my daughter put it on her phone and was in another room for a second. She goes, "Dad, why is SpongeBob on my TV?" And I go, "Oh, Brooklyn, you accidentally clicked on the Nickelodeon." She ended up watching the whole second half on there. She
Right,
thought it was hilarious.
it was
Yeah.
pretty
So
funny. Like I watched a big chunk of it, and you know, I mean, I personally would have preferred, you know, just a normal podcast because, you know,
yeah,
to hear Tony Romo or whatever, whatever your opinions are on Tony Romo. But it was like funny. And if you really had no stake in the game or you're just looking for something else, like it was a good broadcast. I thought Nate Burleson does an outstanding job. You know, he was here. He was with the Browns for a real short time. And you could tell he was like a great talker then, and you could tell he had a bright future. I mean, and now he's just exploded, right? NFL, CBS This Morning, he does that. Really yeah. talented. But it was a fun broadcast.
Yeah, no question. All right, let's do a kind of a sandwich here, and we'll end with the Super Bowl. Let's do three topics that I have for you real quick before we just break down the game a little bit. And this is going to be a little shorter of a pod here today. But first of all, I want to go back, and you mentioned it on the last pod, but it was just kind of happening as we were recording. Have you dug up any more info on the Brown Stadium in Brook Park? Do you have any thoughts on that? Any factual information or just opinion on it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't remember from one week to the next exactly what we covered there, Judd. But obviously, it's an interesting story, and it's a developing story. And I wrote a little bit again. Posted a mailbag yesterday, and got a question about it. And to me, you know, I've been told that they haven't finalized any kind of purchase of the land in Brook Park, right near the airport over on Snow Road. The old Ford plants, and they haven't purchased it yet, but it's a possibility. They've looked into it. It feels like some public posturing between the Browns and the city of Cleveland, right? The Browns put out their statement Thursday morning. I know after we were done with the pod, the city puts out a statement, you know, both saying good things about each other, talking about continuing to negotiate. But, you know, if things weren't at an impasse, or at least if there weren't difficulties in the negotiation, I don't think it would have gone to public, right? I don't think the Haslams would have gone down the road with Brook Park if they thought everything was going to work out in Cleveland. So whether it's a leverage play or what have you, there's obviously some issues going on in these negotiations. And, you know, it's a $1 billion deal, right? At least. So that makes it complicated. You have to get different levels of government involved, whether it's city, county, state. It's more than just a stadium, right? It's the downtown development could possibly go into it. The Browns want the land bridge, which, you know, some part of the budget was just allocated for a land bridge, and that's been a big sticking point for the Browns. Then you have, do you renovate the stadium? Do you build a dome? Is there any way to retractable dome? Right? Like, there's all these big discussions that need to go into the stadium. And I think that's where we are right now. And the lease runs out at the end of 2028. So, you know, you got 4+ years. So you really have to start moving towards something, right? Where whatever this final thing is going to be, you need the site. You need the decision if it's, you know, if it stays at the lakefront, if it moves somewhere else inside Cleveland, if it moves somewhere out in the suburbs, do you renovate or do you do a dome, right? And for a long time, the Browns stance, and publicly the stance might be the same, I haven't talked to the Haslams or talked to somebody at the Browns recently, but I know a year ago, and even through July, I think when we talked to the Haslams, the public stance was they want to renovate the building, right? The current stadium renovated as part of the downtown development. But that would not be a dome. It would just be renovations. It feels like that's kind of shifting from what you hear, from what you see, what you read. It's shifting, and maybe the Browns are leaning more toward a dome. Now, nobody's told me that specifically, but if that's the case, right, then the price skyrockets. And then it's all about funding. How much are the Haslams willing to pay? How much do they expect from the city? You know, what rights does each side get when you reach an agreement like this? And does the city have the money? And where does the city get the money, right? So that's why it's so complicated, and why I think there's some friction between the sides.
What would you rather have, Scott? Would you rather have a dome or open-air stadium like they've always had?
John, I'm so conflicted on that because, like, right, like I appreciate, and I want to hear your opinion, but I appreciate the outdoor football. And I also think that, so I appreciate the outdoor football. That's always how it's been. I think you're better off with grass, right? The studies show, and the players want to play on grass, it's better for the players' health and safety, and I think that's important. And I don't think you can have grass inside a dome in Cleveland. I know, you know, they have grass inside domes other places in the country, but they can grow the grass outside and ship it in, right? I mean, what do you do with the grass in Cleveland in January? I mean, that's not my expertise, but I think it'd be hard to do, right? There's no grass in Detroit Stadium. I don't think Minnesota has grass in its stadium. So, that I think I would, my default would be traditionalist. Now, if you guaranteed me that building a dome would get, what, pick a number, 20, 30 big events a year, maybe it doesn't even have to be that many, whatever it is, right? We all talk about they only use the stadium 12 times a year. And I get it. Like, that's doesn't seem the best use of money and public resources. But, you know, just because you build a dome, does that mean Super Bowls are coming? No, it probably means one Super Bowl would come. Final Fours, is that once every 40 years? Like, what are you drawing that's going to use that facility to make it worthwhile, to make it worth the extra, let's call it an extra $1 billion? Are you going to get enough use out of it without taking away the same events from Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in the convention center, in the convocation center, right? Like, are there enough events to come to Cleveland where the dome would be worth it and worth it financially and not suck other events from other places? And I don't know that, but if you guaranteed me that it could, then yes, then I think a dome would be worth it because you need to get your bang for your buck, right? And it's not just about playing football. It's about the city and the region and tax dollars and all those things.
Yeah, I'd say 9-year-old Chud, 18-year-old Chud, into my 20s, 30s, I wouldn't have even wanted to debate it. Outdoor only, you know? Yeah, that's the history. That's what we know and love. That's Cleveland Browns football. But getting close to 50-year-old Chud, I think I might go dome now, Scott. I mean, I just think I'm looking at more things now, and I think it would just be better for the city to attract more events, like you said. And I think even if you get one Super Bowl, it's worth it. Yeah. If you get a couple Final Fours, all these concerts that maybe you miss out on right now. I mean, all these concerts that, you know, go to other cities that, you know, we could possibly get in a dome stadium. I know we have the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse and some come to the outdoor stadium, but I just think it would be, I don't know. I also don't know. I mean, how much has the weather really played an advantage right for this team over the last few decades? I mean, so I'm more open to it. Is it a done deal in my head? Not done, because I'm a little conflicted like you are, but I'm definitely leaning more towards dome.
Yeah, that's interesting, Chud. And I don't go to games, right? I mean, I don't go to games as a fan. So I don't know I'm talking Bronze games. I go to other games as a fan. But my point is, I don't have to sit outside when last year against the Saints it was below zero, right? So, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I don't think that weather has helped the Browns recently, and most of that's because the Browns have been bad, right? But last year they lost to the dome team, the Saints. The weather's terrible. They lost to a dome team. So, like to me, I don't know if that's even a great selling point. Is, oh, you have this advantage, right? I mean, your quarterback right now, who may or may not be the quarterback in 2029, whether it's a dome, would rather play in a dome, I think, right? Deshaun Watson. I think most players would probably rather play in a dome. But I also appreciate that fan element, the fan part of it, where you don't want to sit outside when it's below zero or when it's raining, right? All those things. It's just easier to watch a game in a dome. It's more comfortable. So I get that part of it. I also think that that's once or twice a year. So is that reason to put a dome on, spend an extra $1 billion? Like, I'm kind of conflicted because, obviously you need to keep the Browns and they're such a huge part of this, but it's also a drain financially, right? Like, in Cleveland's doesn't have all the money in the world. So I just think it's an interesting kind of civic argument when you're talking about maybe an extra $1 billion. You just have to, in my mind, you just have to get your money's worth.
Yeah, sure. All right, we could talk about this in the upcoming weeks more, and maybe if anyone listening wants to ask a question or give their opinion to you, put it in your mailbox, and we could discuss it later on. I'd love to know what people think. not necessarily just on Twitter, but in the mailbag there. You want to wrap up the coaches real quick?
Yeah, so I mentioned Andy Dickerson and Roy Isfahan, and we knew that because Bill Callahan left to be with his son. The only other coaching movement that I did want to touch on was Ben Bloom. He'd been here for a few years. He was run game coordinator for a couple of years, and then he became defensive line coach last year. And the Browns decided that they weren't going to keep him in that role. And they had hired Jacques Césaire to be the D-line coach. He came over from the Texans. And there was some question of whether Ben Bloom would remain on staff in a different role. Well, when the Titans announced their new staff, which included Bill, it's Brian Callahan's the head coach, and includes Bill Callahan as the O-line coach, he left the Browns. They also announced that Ben Bloom will be their outside linebackers coach. So it feels like the Browns have their staff in place. Now you could always have, you know, a different, you know, a quality control coach or a different assistant coach show up. But it feels like the staff is set. And to me, that was the last question, whether or not Bloom stayed and Bloom is gone.
All right. So the combine is next on the list, right? That's what we look forward to next?
Yeah, combine. It starts so like a week and a half. It's like Monday, the last Monday in February is when I'll show up. I plan to get to the 26th, and then we'll have interviews. Like, so I'd expect Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Bear to talk like the 27th to 28th. And then you get the players, you know, the draft picks or the, you know, the draft eligible guys beginning to talk, right? So we'll get a Browns update. We'll get Stefanski and Barry on the coaching changes because we really haven't, you know, Kevin Stefanski gave a quick statement when he introduced Ken Dorsey, but we haven't gotten to ask him about why the change with Alex Van Pelt, why the other changes he made. We'll ask him if he's going to call plays, right? We'll see if he knows that answer. And then begins the build up, the real build up to free agency, which begins March 11th.
You just kind of briefly talked about some different things, but what are you most excited about with the combine, or is there a player there you're really eyeing the most?
Yeah. To me, when the Browns don't have a first-round pick, which they won't for the third straight year, right?
Yeah.
Then the focus shifts for me to more Brown stuff. So it's Stefanski and Barry and the new coaching staff and free agency, right? You know, can they resign anybody at any time? So is it, you know, are you going to bring back Za'Darius Smith? You know, is what's going on with Amari Cooper? Are you going to restructure? Or Nick Chubb, do we have a Nick Chubb update, right? Like, all those things, it becomes more Browns focused for me. But there is draft stuff, right? And, you know, and we'll talk about this moving ahead, Chud. But for me, the areas that the Browns need to focus on the most are receiver and defensive line. And I think that's where the most questions are. You know, Za'Darius Smith's a free agent at end. D tackles, Jordan Elliott, Maurice Hurst-II, Shelby Harris are all free agents. So you got to add a couple guys there. And it could be a big money guy or two on the D-line, because we know how important that is. We know how important that is in Jim Schwartz's scheme. And then it's receiver, right? It just feels like there were guys short all year. And Amari Cooper's getting a year older. Elijah Moore is going to be in the last year of his contract. So there's some moving pieces there. You know, do they go out and sign a big-time free agent? Do they cut Amari Cooper? I don't expect them to do that, but he's due $20 million. You can save a lot of cap money if you just cut him. Or you could save cap money by giving him a restructure and extending him, but then you're paying him into his 30s, right? Or do you just let it ride out the last year of $20 million? Do you just draft a receiver early, second round, let's say, to pair with Cooper and then sign a, you know, third-tier free agent? So I think there's a lot of ways this could go, and we'll talk about it in the future. But to me, when I get there, my focus will be when we get to the draft, guys, right, after the Browns focus, when we switch over to the draft, guys, it's going to be receivers and D-linemen.
All right. Anything else before we finish up on the Super Bowl?
Well, yeah, because I want to end on a high note, Chud, but I just felt like, you know, the way yesterday's Super Bowl parade finished in Kansas City, and I wake up and that's the first thing I read about. Like, I didn't want to drag this podcast down, but it just felt like we needed to talk about, not even talk about, just mention the horrific tragedy that ended that Super Bowl parade. Like, Kansas City's on cloud nine, and it comes crashing down and is forever changed by, you know, senseless gun violence. And it's horrible, and it's kids going to the emergency room, and It just left a pit in my stomach for the last however many hours, and I just wanted to at least bring that up to because it was on my mind, and I just did not want to overlook that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, and that was a top story on our show this morning. We're taping this Thursday late morning. Obviously, that was the top story on our this morning, and followed along with it yesterday as much as I could. And you know, it's just. And this is the sickening part about it that bothers me the most is that I don't want this to come across the wrong way because the word isn't numb to it.
Yeah.
But the fact that I sit there and I'm here we go. It's become part of our normal part of society, which is just a bunch of bull crap. And I sit there and I think it's a shame. And I think the thing that's I'd love to sit here and say, hey, we have an answer for it, but the problem is there just isn't. And everyone says, oh, we got to figure out the answer. I don't know what it is, but I will say this. Parenting needs to change in this country, and I think it starts there. And then you could get into whether you should be able to have guns or not.
But the bottom line is it just that, you know, we have to be better as people, and it's just a shame that, you know, idiots are taking lives and causing violence, and I agree with you. So I am glad you brought that up.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And you're right. It's gotten to the point where it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop me from. It used to be when one of these things would happen, it stopped the world, and that doesn't happen anymore because it happens so often, and that's the worst indictment on our society, maybe. Ever, right? That okay, well, that happened again, right? Oh, that happened again. And that's just garbage.
And that it can happen anywhere,
exactly.
At any time.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
So, all right. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And here's the thing, too. I actually thought about that when we talked about doing the pod. It's going to make me want to talk a little bit less about the Super Bowl now because now that this has happened, it's like, oh my gosh, now we're going to go talk about the game. But I do think we deserve a couple minutes to do it just because we have talked about it football all year long, so I think it's fair that we can have a say on it. But man, overall, what'd you think? I mean, first half started pretty slow, but I thought after that, man, second half and overtime, You're looking at only the second Super Bowl ever to go to overtime, and at the end of the day, it's going to go down as a classic,
right? And I bring up Tom Withers on here every once in a while. He texted me like, hey, is this Super Bowl going to change? Like, are they going to save it because it's a clunker, right? And then and then it did change, and it got to be really exciting. And overtime, right? The second overtime game in Super Bowl history. And it really kicked into gear after a slow start and a sloppy start, right? We saw fumbles from McCaffrey, a fumble from Pacheco that probably cost both those teams points. And then it started to heat up. And it's just so many facets there, Judd, right? Like, here's my main take is it feels inevitable that Patrick Mahomes is going to win that game, right? Because he's so good, and he's got the ball at the end. And when he does it, right, so he wins the game, and you go, oh, that was going to happen. It was destined to happen. I understand that feeling, and he is that good where you have that takeaway. But there are about 10 things in that game that if they happen differently, it's not inevitable, and the Chiefs don't win, right? So, yes, he's great, and he tips those scales. But if Jake Moody doesn't miss the extra point, it's a four-point game, and the Chiefs aren't able to settle for a field goal, and they have to go for it, and maybe they don't get the touchdown to win the game, right? Like, that changes things. Brock Purdy has third and four late in regulation. I think it's a regulation. Maybe it might have been before. Yeah, it's before the field goal, a late field goal, right? And he's got third and four, and we've seen it. It's a blitz, and the ball gets tipped. But he's got Brandon Ayuk running out of the slot wide open over the middle. But he tries to throw the slant to the outside guy, and it gets deflected. And I think if he sees Ayuk, who's got off coverage, it's a first down, and they probably take the rest of the clock and kick the field goal that winds up winning the game, right? Like, so there's so many, because the extra point was earlier. It's a missed extra point, and then Chiefs kick a field goal, I think, and then they get the ball back late and kick the field goal to force overtime. But if the Chiefs or the 49ers probably could have run out the clock if they pick up that first down, but it doesn't happen, right? And then you go to overtime, and Shanahan takes the ball, which he probably shouldn't have, right? And then there's a play in the red zone there on third down where they have a blown assignment up front, and he doesn't have the second to get to the open guys, and maybe still had an open guy, and he should have hit him. Purdy, I'm talking about. So there's so many plays that I thought the Niners controlled their destiny, and then when they didn't capitalize, then it left it into Mahomes' hands, and then Mahomes is getting Mahomes, right? But even then, fourth and one, they couldn't stop it. And Nick Bosa, who had a ton of pressures all game, he bit on that fake play-action stuff, right? The zone read looks. I know that was a design keeper from Mahomes, but they've been running that, like the zone read kind of looks, right? The where the end comes in, and Mahomes would hand it off, and he's crashing and crashing. And the Chiefs saw that, and Andy Reid saw that, and then they took advantage of that aggression multiple times late in the game for Mahomes to get outside the pocket. And I thought that was a good adjustment by them. But again, if Bosa doesn't crash, can he make a play there? Or at least he forces Mahomes to throw the ball, and then it could get dropped, right? So those are my biggest takeaways. But fascinating game, exciting game. And, you know, you can question Kyle Shanahan for a couple of big things there.
Well, yeah, great points all around. Number one, and we said this before the game, don't bet against Mahomes.
Right.
And it ended up working out that way. But the thing is, you're right. What you don't want to do is give him the opportunity to do what he did. And that's what the 49ers did. And you got to get some breaks, the fumble, as you mentioned, and different things have to happen, a missed extra point. But the other thing, too, is I let the 49ers, you know, too many three and outs in the second half. And, you know, they had a chance to, I think, take control of the game, and they didn't. And brilliant play call by Andy Reid. You know what's amazing? You go back, if you watch some of these NFL things on Twitter, and you get to hear, it's amazing how calm these guys are. Like, I'd be freaking out, man. And they're just so calm. Like, all right, we're going to call this play. Mahomes is like, comes in the huddle. All right, you know, hot dog mustard or whatever the play. Well, you know what I mean?
Corn, it's dog, like, corn dog mustard.
Yeah, corn dog.
Tom, like, and no Jerry. Big
deal. Yeah, Tom, it's like no big deal. I mean, and that's what's amazing, and that's what makes him special. So you can't give Mahomes the opportunity. That's the thing. They gave him the opportunity, and at the end of the day, if he gets the ball last, you know, you keep hearing everyone say, oh, you're going to give Mahomes four downs and this and that. You know, it's interesting. I forgot about the overtime rules until they explained them on TV. And, you know, we're just fans or media watching. Right. Boy, crazy to think players forgot about or didn't realize what the rule was. Well, that's interesting.
You know, that's a great point. And apparently the Chiefs were well-schooled on that, and they'd gone over it. And the Niners didn't have the same awareness. And I thought Kyle Juszczyk, right? He went to Cloverleaf, right? In Lodi. He went to Harvard, right? So smartest guy you're going to have on the Niners, right? Or one of the smartest guys. And I saw the NFL films, and he said, like, until they flashed on the scoreboard, right, that he didn't know the rules. So if he doesn't know them, that means all the guys on that roster don't know them, right? And that is an indictment on Shanahan. Now, I don't think that affected the outcome of the game, right? They're just out there playing. It's not like Yusuf's doing anything different, whether or not the Chiefs get the ball back. And they probably figured it out at some point that, hey, this game's not over when we kick the field goal here. But having said that, you brought up the fourth down thing, Chud, and I don't want to belabor it, but I'm so glad you said that. I undervalue the importance of that. The importance of having the ball second and knowing you can use four downs, right? That makes such a difference when you hear everybody talk about it. You hear coaches talk about it. You hear players talk about it. And I've always, not dismissed, but I haven't given that the weight I should when you're making that decision. Where if it's third and six, you say, okay, if we don't, you know, if you have the ball first, you don't convert third and six, you punt or you kick a field goal. If you know what you have to do, score a touchdown to tie or score a touchdown to win or kick a field goal to tie, whatever that is, you know what you have to do, right? And if you're in your own territory, it's you know, if you're not in field goal range, if you're not in touchdown range, it's four down territory. It just changes how you think. It changes how you approach third and six, fourth and two, right? Like, the decisions are almost made for you, and it helps. It gives you one more down to get a first down. And when you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes and a play caller like Andy Reid, that's so valuable.
That play call was incredible. I mean, it seemed so easy. Thank goodness they changed that rule. You know, whether you're rooting for the Chiefs or the 49ers, I don't care. But just as a football fan, how cheated we would have been if that game would have ended on a field goal in overtime, you know?
Right. Or even a touchdown. I mean, that's why they changed the rule, right? Is that Josh Allen, Mahomes game, where Mahomes got the ball first in overtime, they scored a touchdown and game's over, right?
Because
at some point, a field goal wasn't going to, you know, they changed the rules at some point where a field goal wasn't enough. But yeah, you needed, both teams need to have the ball, right? In a Super Bowl, both teams need to have the ball for what feels like an equitable ending, which is why Shanahan then thought, well, if there's a third possession, then it's sudden death. That's why I want the ball. And I understand that thinking. But what has swayed me is the four down thing and having the ball second and knowing exactly what you need to do, especially with Patrick Mahomes, right? Maybe if you're playing a team that didn't have the quarterback, didn't have the offense, if you think it's going to go field goal, then you want that third possession. But it certainly backfired on Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, no question. The thing about it is, though, you're right. They should have gone on defense first. That's what they should have done. But here's the thing. It's tough to be too critical because, I mean, if they do score a touchdown, or how about just hold Kansas City out of the end zone, which is hard to do. I mean, you know, no one's talking about it.
Yeah, it's not a terrible – like, I don't think it cost them – well, it's hard to say it didn't cost them the game. It factored into it. But
yeah,
but it's, I think on its face, it's not the worst decision, right? And I think analytics people can argue about it. I don't think it's a clear cut. You take, you know, like in olden times, it would be ridiculous not to take the ball first, right? If score first, you got to take the ball. This, I think, is more nuanced. But what is interesting about it is the Chiefs knew for sure they wanted the ball second. So they had a clear cut. This is what we prefer. And then the Niners played into that. But I'm with you. I don't think it was the worst decision ever. It's just interesting. They couldn't hold the lead, right? That's the second time when Shanahan's been a head coach, they couldn't hold the lead. And again, that's, you know, a ton of stuff plays into this. You add in when he was coordinator with the Falcons, right? Like, that, it's starting to build up. But, you know, it's a couple plays here or there, right? And mixed extra point, it could be the difference, right? And that's not Kyle Shanahan's fault.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we were both pretty much really close with the score. Yeah. I think you were 27-26. I was 27-24, 25-22. Pretty close there. I mean, we had it.
Yeah. Hey, did you win any squares?
No, I never win squares.
Dude, I was in two different pools. I had 9-9 for both, right?
Really?
Which are terrible. I mean, you know, the odds of that. But that's how regulation ended. At 9-9, but you don't get any. I didn't get any money because it's the final score, not the end of regulation.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's right. No, I didn't win any squares. I did put a little bit of some marbles on the Chiefs.
Oh, there you go.
So that was good. It was a good Super Bowl. And now we move on to the off season.
There we go.
Yeah, you got anything else on it? I think we pretty much wrapped up that Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think we're good. I just real quick. I don't know if you watch Inside the NFL. It's moved to, I don't know if it's a CW or one of those like syndicated networks now. It used to be on HBO or Showtime, right? It used to be a big deal. Like when I was a kid, it was a big deal.
Huge,
right?
Len Dawson, Nick Bonacani.
Yeah, exactly. And then it kind of, I think Chris Collinsworth was on there for a while. Then it kind of faded. But now I get emails because, you know, I'm in the media. So I get emails about, hey, we're going to have this and this. And they have Brown stuff on. They had so much good NFL films footage in the one I watched the other day that it's worth looking up just that footage. It's some of the stuff we talked about. But guys talking about the coin flip and, you know, and we don't want the ball. It's when Greenlaw goes down for the Niners, the reaction that everybody has to it. there's just so much good behind the scenes NFL
that
film
crazy.
Stuff. And that's a good, you know, we can talk about whether or not the analysis on that. It's actually pretty good. Ryan Clark's good, and Chris Long's on there. Like, it's good stuff. But the NFL film stuff is so quality that I really enjoyed that.
Oh, I'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Chad, I appreciate you doing this as always. I think I'll give you next week off. We got a short week. We got a holiday week.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll hook up from the combine or when I get back from the combine. We'll figure that out. If I can squeeze something in from the combine, because I know there'll be news coming out of there for sure. So,
Doubt. So, a week off next week. Wow. Yeah, we haven't had one in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Fun. You sleep in.
Thanks. All right.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch, Chud. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you could read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.